the Minivade Gang Podcast, episode 113. I'm Steve Borsch, and I am on with Tim Elliott.
Hey, good morning.
And Graham Thickens.
Greetings from Southern California.
That's right. That's right.
And where it's very early.
And our buddy Phil Wilson's off. His barbells showed up, and he's so excited to use them that he's out pumping weights in the garage. And our famous, fabulous guest host, our favorite guest host, Julio Ojeda Zapata.
Hello from St. Paul.
There you go. Warm St. Paul, right?
Yeah, sunny.
Are you indoors?
Yeah, I'm in the home office in my jammies with my coffee in my hand.
Fabulous. Well, so we had kind of an interesting week, a lot of stuff going on. But I wanted to start off because, Graham, you were at Demo. And let's hear about that, because you had a really great interview with Leif Larson at Workface, and a bunch of others like Rob Glazer and so on. What happened out there?
Well, it was a great high energy event, even bigger and better than I thought it might be. There were 52 companies that pitched and about 600 attendees. And lots of great stuff on stage, you know, mobile, social, cloud, enterprise technologies, and some really excellent companies, some of which I still have to post about. I have about three more interviews I have to upload. But I did my live blog thing. I was telling somebody it seemed like I'd run a marathon when it was over. I felt like I'd written 10,000 words, you know. It's all up there archived, and it was really very well put on, and VentureBeat, you know, co-produces it, Matt Marshall and crew, with the IDG folks, and did a particularly good job this year. It was lots of fun.
Great. And what was your, I don't know, maybe your number one standout company? I mean, other than our pals at Workface.
Oh yeah, I liked lots of other stuff. I particularly liked Photo Rocket ahead of time, because, you know, companies are tweeting that they're going to be at Demo ahead of time, and they just can't announce what they're going to be announcing until the embargo lifts on the first morning. But I really like Photo Rocket as a new photo sharing application for Windows, Mac, and iPhone, with Android coming. It's just a really clean, simple, quick way to share photos. So they were one of my favorites in the, I guess, the consumer category. But there were some other really interesting ones, too. Nimble is a social CRM application from the guy who founded Goldmine back in the day and sold it, and that one was one of the Demo God winners. And but there are lots of really great ones. Socialize, EYES, from Rob Glazer and his co-founder, is looking like it's going to be big, just because it's getting so much play. They've raised a lot of money, obviously, because Glazer's a VC himself at Accel Partners. And so that one's about video chat, but you connect via Facebook, so it's your real identity. So none of this chat roulette stuff, you know? So that one's one to watch, I think. Yeah. And there were a few companies from, in fact, there was about five from Toronto, one called TrendSpotter, another one called Thora, which is about social content curation. In fact, they're both of those are about curation. And another one called Guardly, which is about personal safety via mobile and connecting with your network. When you're in dangerous situations or emergency situations without having to dial 911. But there were some really funky things, like in the consumer category, Eco ATM is a kiosk to recycle your old phones. that actually spits out cash. You put in your phone, it reads what it is, checks the system, and gives you the option of either donating it to charity or getting cash right there on the spot. So that was
I thought it was other devices too. Or is it just phones?
I'm not really sure how it works. I didn't actually have time to try it, but they were demoing it with phones. Okay. And there's a slot where you can actually stick your phone in, and it'll determine what kind it is and whether it's working properly. It'll tell you what the value is. And, I don't know if you can cram an iPad 1 in there or not, but but I guess we kind of know what those are going to be worth. And we're going to be talking about that. But we saw a lot of great stuff, and the whole list is up there. I posted it, and in fact, I posted it the day it was announced. Announced on Sunday. What all the 52 companies are, A to Z, and then covered all their onstage pitches live. And tried to, kind of wrap up each one as best I could inside of 6 minutes.
Yeah.
So it was, as always, a great time and lots and lots of energy,
So, Graham, what was your key takeaway from demo this year? Any trends that you didn't see before going in?
Well, social's in everything, Social's at the core of everything. And, the biggest thing that comes out of it is, these companies can get started so quickly and they can grow so rapidly that it's so different than the way things used to be. I mean, one of the VCs, Mike Maples, used the line, 500,000 is the new 5 million. It doesn't take much to launch many of these companies. And if they take off, they can grow on such a trajectory that it's crazy. I mean, Groupon got to a billion faster than any other company ever.
Well, you know who predicted that was, of all people, Ray Kurzweil, the scientist and inventor, and wrote the singularity is near, and talked about the exponential growth that's occurring. And the singularity is when the world's computers connected have more MIPS, more processing cycles than the human brain, all the human brains on Earth. Well, he predicted that we'd see companies that would go from zero to a billion almost overnight, and then they would disappear pretty quickly. And we'd see a lot more of that. And now with New York Times and everybody else sort of jumping into the Groupon clone market, it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, and companies like Zynga, they're, another one that just came from the standing start and, grew huge, really, really fast, So this is just continuing. I mean, social is in everything now, and everything's cloud. I mean, there were some hardware products shown. There was a one of the Demo God winners. They name a winner in each category. Nobody really knows how they vote for these things. I've been going. This is my 12th demo. I don't know how they vote for these things. But one guy that won in the I don't know what it would have been in the cloud category. I guess is V3 out of Salt Lake City, I think, and it's a server for virtual desktops, making them faster than normal desktops. Actually. Performing faster than normal desktops. You can have 400 virtual desktops per server, and he comes out holding this thing on his shoulder, And so there was some hardware shown, but increasingly it's all apps and mostly SaaS or mobile kind of apps. So it's just there's a wealth of new stuff that came out, and you might want to go and scroll through it and find some interesting stuff. I got stuff I'm going to tell you guys about separately that I know you'll be interested in. I mean, there's just so much when you got 52 companies. It's a fire hose,
Well, and what's interesting is the like even today the article that came out in the Washington Post about Unemployment dips to 8.9%, 192,000 jobs added. Well, not only are there more tech startup events, there seem to be more, you know, the number of them seems to be accelerating, and which is all good. There also seems to be just simply more opportunity. It's as though the purse strings, not only for venture capital, but also for people to buy services and to try new things, seems to be loosening up. And I know that's anecdotal, a lot of it, but I don't know. I mean, when I think about Julio, when there wasn't there an announcement this week of a device? That may, wow, what's that?
Yeah, no idea.
Weird. Okay. I'll just edit that out.
There we go. All right. Can you hear me okay?
Can hear you now. You sound great.
Yeah, so there's a little echo.
Yeah. And so what I keep looking for and trying to see is, you know, where are the opportunities and where are the paths and who's accelerating where and so on and so forth. And I have to admit, I watched the entire keynote for the iPad 2 launch. And Julio, you had to be all over this. I don't know if you've received one yet to look at, but
hopefully very soon.
Yeah. Did you watch the whole keynote?
Yeah, I watched it when it posted, it was pretty good. Apple has this bad habit of bogging down when they do software demos. The garage demo was interminable, but you know, generally, you know, very well executed launch.
So, how is it different from the iPad 1 where you were actually at the keynote event?
How is the new iPad different?
Yeah, how was the keynote itself? Because I've read around and I haven't seen it yet, but I did see some of the live blogs and it seemed very similar to the first event.
Oh yeah, very very similar. Same venue, you know, Steve on the stage, the chair, you know, people lean back in the cushy chair, you know, to demo the applications. It was almost a carbon copy of the original demo. And I debated whether to lobby, you know, for a trip out, get my employer to pay for a trip out there, and I decided it just wasn't worth it because Apple's MO is to release a revolutionary product, but then the updates after that are incremental.
Yeah.
From one iPhone to another, you don't see a whole lot of difference. But if you compare the original iPad to the present iPad, my God, it's huge. But Apple, you know, sort of got there in baby steps. That's its pattern. So this new iPad is, you know, very, very incremental update. It has, you know, has some nice stuff, but it's not hugely, hugely different from the original iPad. I did write a post, you know, when I was out in San Francisco to cover the iPhone 4 launch. I took that was my first ever, you know, iPad only business trip. I didn't take a laptop. I took an iPad and used that exclusively, you know, for my productivity. And so this week I wrote a post, you know, I analyzed, you know, the announcement and the new features in the iPad 2. And then I wrote a post sort of speculating how my trip, you know, might have been different than if I had an iPad 2 instead of an iPad 1. And you can check that on my blog, yourtechweblog.com. But, you know, if I had a Verizon iPad, for instance, you know, I would have had better data access. You know, the webcam would have been huge because my usual MO when I'm traveling, I say goodnight to my kid, you know, via webcam, and I couldn't do that with the iPad. It was very, very frustrating not to have that webcam capability, and so on and so forth. It would have been a different trip, and so I wrote an extensive post about that. Check it out.
Well, one thing I'm curious about is, while you were sitting back and watching this, you know, when they showed the video of the impact the iPad has made, a couple things struck me. One was just about all the iPads they were showing were 3G models because you could see the black bar in the back for the antenna, you know, almost indicating that just about everybody that's doing anything with the iPad is doing it mobily. But I suppose they had to if you're out by the Golden Gate Bridge doing things with the iPad. But the other thing that really struck me was the number of use cases and success stories with it. And in fact, I'm looking right now at Apple's site where they have the iPad in business. And so having written a book about the iPad in business, how do you see this new device providing opportunities for not only companies to use it, but for developers to develop for it, just strictly, you know, enterprise business apps and so forth?
Mm-hmm. Well, again, the new iPad is sort of an incremental upgrade, but you know, one of the key things that's gonna power a whole new wave of app development is more power under the hood. I mean, it has more performance, you know, vastly more graphics capability, and then when you couple that with the camera, you know, you're possibly gonna see a lot of photo related use cases. I don't know if that's business, but I was doing an inventory of iPhone photo apps last night, and it's just amazing how many of them there are out there. I was you know, checking out Instagram because I'm going to be writing about that, and I sort of extrapolated and tried to get a handle of how many photo apps there are out there. It's impossible. There are just too many. And then I switch over to the iPad, and there's quite a proliferation of photo-related apps for the iPad. But this is just with the cameras. This is just going to explode. That's an example, but you know, back to your question, you know, business. I don't know that it's going to be hugely different in a business context because of aside from the camera for web conferencing, which is very important for business. Aside from that, it's not all that different. The iPad, the point of my book is the iPad has had a huge impact in business. It will continue to do so, but I don't know that it'll be all that different aside from the communications capabilities with the webcam.
Well, I have a buddy of mine out in California who said something really interesting to me, which I have to admit, I stood back and said, oh yeah. And it had to do with, and he said, we won't know until somebody buys one and tears it apart. But he said, hey, there's probably more RAM in the new one. And because of the faster processor, it can probably cache faster than the other one, which means that iOS won't have to kill applications running in the background as frequently as they do with the existing iPad. And I know that I've had that experience where I've had apps open in the background and expecting that they'll be self-updating, you know, like Twitter, for example, where I might have three or four other things open, and iOS indiscriminately, or probably discriminately, there's probably some method behind it. Like if you haven't used an app for a while, that's the first one it kills. But it goes in and it shuts it down. Now it's still quote unquote running in the background, so you know if you pull it up, you can get back to the app pretty quickly. But when I realized that A, they'll probably have more RAM and that the processing will be faster, that may very well in and of itself allow business to use it more because they'll be able to have, you know, a business user will have, you know, their Salesforce app running in the background, and they'll be using Keynote and building a new slide deck, and the iOS won't kill Salesforce.
Well,
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say that isn't the same version of iOS consistent across all the iPads? So if they had that sort of functionality, wouldn't it work? Maybe slower, but wouldn't it work on the first generation?
I don't know the answer to that.
Pretty much. Although, you know, 2 points about your what you were saying. Number one, I'm hearing otherwise. I'm hearing that the RAM on this thing is limited. We're in the realm of speculation. When iFixit gets its hands on this thing, we'll know. But yeah. I'm hearing the RAM is a weakness because they didn't dramatically increase the RAM. That's what I'm hearing. And then the other. You know, problem with the scenario you describe is that multitasking on the iPad isn't like full multitasking in the sense that a lot of apps you're using them, but then when you switch to another app, the first app sort of enters sort of a suspended animation state. It sort of stops whatever it's doing, right, with, you know, with exceptions, audio apps and so forth. The problem with the iPad still is, you know, it does not have, you know, 100% full multitasking as we understand that. And so this is a problem compared to, say, the Motorola Zoom Android-based tablet that I'm using right now, or, you know, WebOS tablets. Those multitask crazy well.
But I did an experiment on my iPhone 4, and I quit all the apps and rebooted the phone, opened up Skype, because this is the one that bugs me the most, opened up Skype, logged in, you know, stuff's just running in the background. And then I brought up Safari, and then I brought up GWiz, which is a Gmail app. And then I started loading a bunch of other apps that I run all the time, you know, Twitter and Boxcar and Facebook and so forth. And then went back to Skype, which should have been running, and it logged back in. So that tells me, because I've run this now a couple of different ways, that tells me that the more apps you open, that it'll start to quit processes for previous apps. So I had to re-log in to Skype. And that's kind of where I was going with this, is that I'm just wondering if this new one that's faster and potentially has more RAM, will this make, you know, the quote-unquote sort of multitasking more efficient? And then what does that mean for adoption?
Yeah, and the answer is definitely yes, but to a very limited extent, given the iPad's inherent limitations. It's still, the hardware is still somewhat limited. I mean, Apple does this intentionally. They like to keep things simple and elegant without a lot of complications, and that entails compromises, and that's very clear with this device. So if you if you're a business person traveling with an iPad, you absolutely have to make compromises because it's not going to be anything close to a laptop in certain ways.
So everyone here has been on the iPad for a year, and I've held off. I wanted to see how the market was going to develop and see particularly Android, but also, you know, WebOS from HP now. And after, you know, this week, it's clear that to me anyway, that iPad's really the only way to go. And now the decision is, do you get the two or do you get, you know, the ones which they're fire sailing out at a discount now? I mean, as you look at them, is there really a huge difference between the two?
The webcam again is a game changer for me. I cannot conceive of buying an iPad without a camera now. It wouldn't happen. Because my family is spread out. They're in Europe. They're in South America. They're on either coast. They're everywhere. I have a very scattered family. I envy Minnesotans who, you know, have all their family, you know, right here in the area. That's not the case with me. And the web chatting is just is very, very important, and more so if I'm traveling on business. I need to keep in touch with my family, and doing that via audio is not very satisfying. So that the camera is just really big, and that the thinness, I mean, it's amazingly thinner than an iPhone. And you know, when you're lugging gear, or, you know, through an airport and across a city, you know, a far off city, you know, every little bit helps. Which is why, like, for instance, I'm so impressed with the new MacBook Air laptops, which are very speedy, you know, good performance, but they're just amazingly thin. I returned my MacBook Air review units to Apple a while back, and now I have a MacBook Pro on loan, and God, I just carrying this thing on a business trip just makes me almost want to weep, you know, after having, you know, spent time with and I'm not even talking about the 11 inch MacBook Air, just the 13 inch. That's my dream Mac right there. And so a thinner, back to my point, the thinner, the thinness and the somewhat lessened weight is also very important.
Well, you know what? I went out and bought a MacBook Air 11 inch. And, cause remember you and I talked about this at length about, the limitations that I ran into with the iPad, trying to use that as my sole device. And the irony is, even in my slim Tumi briefcase, I can put both the MacBook Air and my, iPad in there, and it weighs less than my MacBook Pro did. And so,
yeah, it's amazing.
I'm actually taking both. It's really amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, one of the other elements that came out of the keynote was this idea that we're in this early stages of a post-PC era. There was an editorial in Engadget that kind of picked up on Steve Jobs's comments at the keynote. What do we think about, you know, tablets as a category and where Apple's, you know, kind of guiding the industry? And really, can anyone catch up with the kind of lead that they have? Looking at the value proposition as someone that hasn't bought anything yet, I really can't go Android or WebOS because they really don't have any apps, and that's the differentiator to me.
That's the first
for a lot of
advantage.
People.
Yeah.
My take on that is I look back to when, you know, Android for phones was brand new, and the original G1 was terrible, and you know there were no apps, and Apple wants everyone to believe that their lead is insurmountable. And that's what the original iPhone felt like. It felt like, you know, the only phone worth buying and everything else was garbage. And I would say just wait, you know, wait a couple of years. I think the Android platform, again, to a very large extent, is going to catch up. But on the other hand, you know, I review a lot of Android phones for the Pioneer Press, and I'm using them one after the other. And the exquisiteness of the experience just isn't there. I mean, Apple really absolutely has it nailed. If I were going to spend my own money on a phone, or it would definitely hands down be an iPhone, absolutely. And so it's gonna be a competitive market. You know, make no mistake. The Android apps are. For tablets are almost non-existent right now, but you know, they'll come, you know, that will happen. But Apple, you know, is going to continue to lead the way. Its hardware is, you know, it's definitely the best, whether it will be, have the majority of market share, you know, 5 years from now. I doubt that, quite frankly, but you know, it's possible.
Well, you know,
just a few years ago, we were using phones just to make phone calls. And then we started using them for text messaging. And then finally, now we can pretty much do what we used to use laptops to do on a phone. And then now it looks like the tablet is sort of taking more of that share. Do we see a place where we're not going to be using PCs as we know them today? We're just be using these mobile devices?
Well, I would say that when I look at the App Store on the Mac, and I use this MacBook 11-inch, and then I see what's coming with Lion, there's no question that Apple is positioning the two to come together at some point, and that they will be, you know, devices that you'll either use the trackpad to swipe, or maybe eventually even the monitor, the display itself will be a touchscreen, and that the two will come together. But I think it's all going to go in that direction. And it's because more and more, you know, the apps that are available on not just iPad, but also Android are integrated experiences with the cloud. So if you're using a feed reader application, for example, you can tweet something, you can send it to Instapaper, you can email the article to someone, yada, yada, yada. So now if you've got 10 cloud sites that you're hooked up with, you can also send your stuff to all these other cloud-based applications. And Apple's doing the same thing. I mean, you go into iMovie and you can send it to Vimeo now and YouTube and so on and so forth. And so it basically saving all these steps. So I see a lot of efficiencies that are going to happen. And I think it's inevitable that PC computing and tablet-based delivery are going to come together.
That's a really, really good point. You know, even before tablets came on the scene, I was sort of training myself to function in the cloud because on the one hand, I got tired of like hard drive failure, you know, causing me to lose data. On the other hand, I got tired of being like chained to my cubicle at the office. I wanted to be able to work as efficiently in the office as out of the office, to be able to just pick up and work anywhere and have access to all the same information. So I set up my work style in such a way that everything was in the cloud so I could work on any computer and be as productive. And so that has, that has positioned me, you know, to use tablets very efficiently in a productivity sense, because with the tablet I'm accessing essentially the same cloud-based information that I'm accessing, you know, with any other kind of computer. But you know, with the added benefit of having, you know, the very intimate touch experience. And as you say, you know, my reader, R-E-E-D-E-R, is my news reader, and it's, I'm also using NewsRec, and it's amazing, you know, how you can just shunt things from place to place. I use Posterous. I can post via email and have Posterous, you know, send things in different directions. And so, you know, if you set up your system right, you can be on this very simple, elegant device that doesn't have a lot of onboard storage, but it's just kind of a window onto the internet. And that window, you know, allows you to manipulate all your data, all your information in very efficient and powerful ways. So it's an exciting time. This whole post PC thing it's early, very, very early in the game. It's to a very large extent, it's a dream, it's a hope. It hasn't really come to pass yet. Apple is kind of pointing, you know, towards a future point, you know, where that will be the case. It isn't the case yet, I don't think. And exactly how this will transpire, how this will unfold, is you know, very unclear. But we're definitely headed into a future where the definition of a computer is going to be very elastic, you know, very flexible, because devices will have all shapes and sizes and will be used in different ways. But, you know, devices with keyboards, with the lid that you flip up, I don't think those are going away, frankly.
So, Julio, have you had a chance to test out the Atrix 4G, the kind of convertible phone / computer?
I haven't, but it's an impressive idea, and I've heard that they're going to be extrapolating that, you know, to other phones. There are going to be other phone and laptop dot combo, so that's not going to be the only one. So I'm very interested in that. I'm told the GUI, you know, the interface is a little clunky if you compare it to say a full Windows or Mac, and it doesn't have the intimacy of a touch screen. And so I'm told it's a little clunky. But on the other hand, when you dock your phone and fire up Firefox or whatever browser's on there, I think it's Firefox, again, you're back into that cloud mode, that cloud state, where basically the browser is your window to your onto the internet and your data and your information. And you're back in that in cloud land, essentially. I've been using the Google Chrome OS notebook, for instance, which you flip the lid up on that thing, and all you see is a Chrome browser. That's all you see all the time. The browser is the operating system. And once you mentally train yourself to accept that and basically use the browser as your gateway to all your productivity, all your information, it's interesting how your perspective changes. And so again, the Atrix is a very good example of how there's going to be an astonishing variety of computing devices. And again, the definition of what a computer is going to change, you know, very, very drastically in the next 5 years.
Well, what I really like about the Atrix is it kind of introduces a different paradigm, and hopefully other people will pick up on it and it'll develop, where you've got a portable device that is kind of the center, and you can augment that with other hardware when you're in the office or in a hotel or whatever. And it kind of reminds me, and I know Steve will kind of smile here, but back in the day, I had a PowerBook Duo, which was a really small laptop in the early 90s that plugged into a like almost floppy like dock when you're in the office, and added, you know, slots and large monitor and all that kind of stuff. Hopefully that sort of thinking will come back to the Mac line at some point. We'll see something like that.
So I'd like to throw something in here with respect to the market. And, you know, on the one hand, you guys know that I'm a huge open source advocate. especially behind WordPress, Drupal, and other packages and so forth. So, you know, on the one hand, I'm really, really excited about the Android space, and yet I'm owning all these Apple devices. But I did have a jailbroken iPhone that I ended up reverting back. And primarily I reverted it back because I had some stuff on there that I didn't trust because I didn't know what it was doing, and I didn't know. And it was, in fact, apparently phoning home to where I don't know. And so I became more and more concerned. Well, now this week, Google removed 21 apps from the Android market after it was discovered that they secretly installed malware. And that happened in January to the smartphone space, started in China. And these 21 programs received more than 50,000 downloads over the course of about 4 days. And so, you know, it sent all these personal details like the phone's IMEI number and so forth, and who knows what else. But do you think that this is going to cause a huge issue for the Android market space, or do you think Google will step in and have a moderated queue of apps that they can analyze first?
That's entirely possible. Amazon is unveiling an Android app store as well, isn't that the case?
Yeah.
And so I think, as you say, exactly, your point is well taken. We're sort of on the cusp of a situation where you're going to be able to get your apps from more places, and those places are going to vary. Some of them are going to be, you know, come one, come all. Others are going to be a little more curated. I think we're eventually going to see the emergence of Android app marketplaces that are hyper selective and have only the best stuff. And I would, you know, quite frankly, feel myself gravitating towards something like that, because the general Android market is a cacophonous bazaar that gives me a headache. Sometimes, like, it's hard to find stuff. There's so much there. The searching capabilities are very poor. It's very unpleasant. I don't like it.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. But as an Android user, one of the interesting things is that there's a little checkbox in the settings that allows you to install applications from anywhere. So you can just get an application from any random website, install it. I think that sort of functionality, the carriers will probably turn off in the future, so that they will force you to go into these curated markets. T-Mobile has their own market, and I'm sure that Verizon and the other carriers will probably do the same thing. So some of the security concerns will be mitigated by that sort of behavior.
So there'll be a layer of trusted analysis of the apps. Is what you're saying.
I mean, we're seeing that right now with what Barnes & Noble is doing with the Nook Color, where they have a heavily curated marketplace for that. And, you know, they will add functionality and apps very slowly to that platform.
Yeah.
But they've gone too far, because they've taken what is essentially, you know, a fully capable Android device and crippled it to the point where it's hardly recognizable as an Android device, because their selectivity with what they put on there is so draconian. So that is unfortunate. That's what has caused people to sort of jailbreak the Nook Color. And so I guess the Nook Color is at one extreme, and the general Android market is at the other extreme. And I'm hoping, I'm really hoping for something in the middle.
You know, speaking of the Nook and what you did with the book iPad and Business, Julio. One of the things that comes up again and again and again, and I'm going to be leading a business roundtable at the Apple Uptown store in March, and this is going to be one of the topics of conversation in this roundtable. But one of the big areas that everybody's really hot on in the enterprise and in small to mid-sized business, quite frankly, is how to publish to the iPad or how to publish to the Android without necessarily having it just be EPUB or just be PDF, both of which are relatively flat, static delivery of content. Is there anything, I mean, Graham, Tim, Julio, are you guys seeing any high-level apps that are akin to an InDesign or Quark for publishing to tablet devices?
That's where Apple, quite frankly, has dropped the ball, because Apple in the past has sort of led the way with iMovie, with iDVD. Yeah. iWeb didn't work out very well, but basically Apple has tried to create apps. It did that just now with the iPad 2, with GarageBand and iMovie. It sort of leads the way. It shows people how to create tools, apps for creating content of various sorts, very elegantly, you know, very easily, in very powerful ways. Apple has led the way in that regard. Yet, inexplicably, it has not come up with that killer app that will let people create, you know, elegant books, magazine style publications and such for use on mobile devices. Apple should really lead the way. If Apple does that, it'll trigger an explosion. Apple has to be the catalyst, has to sort of get that going. And I'm very disappointed that it hasn't done that, because there's a lot of potential there. In fact, some people have speculated that the now, you know, mostly inert iDVD should evolve or morph into something like that.
Well, and there are ways, you know. Apple's created a program where authors can self-publish. But now I can't find this article I'm looking. There's a young woman who is on the Kindle marketplace, who's charging an average of $3 for one of her ebooks, and she's generating $100,000 a month in publishing.
Oh, and, yeah. And, yeah, and I saw that.
I'm going to find that article and put it in the show notes, because, you know, it's that sort of opportunity that, you know, certainly isn't limited to one person that can figure out how to work the system, but instead it's a matter of, you know, we've had customers that we provide these trend albums that are these, you know, 150 image big PDF products, and people can buy them and digitally download them, but then they got to jump through hoops to get it onto their iPad. And, you know, cause you got to bring it into iTunes and yada, yada, yada. You can't just buy it online, download it as like an app and run it, or download it as an EPUB book in the iBookstore and download it. And so it creates these artificial obstacles in front of people to be able to participate in the space. And I do see that as a missing gap. I would argue, though, that Apple and others don't necessarily want to democratize publishing to tablets quite yet. And this is my own personal opinion, but when you remember back in the desktop publishing days when PageMaker first hit, and how agitated everybody was that you'd have these publications with 47 fonts and horrible layout, and, you know, so on and so forth, and they don't want a repeat of that. They want quality apps and quality publications there that are game changing.
And that's that's a really good point. And I think Apple has idiot proofed a lot of its other apps. I mean, it's almost impossible to create a bad output, you know, for my iMovie or such. I mean, these things are done so well and have so many templates that people will just default to. So I think Apple could replay that scenario with publishing.
Well, I was working in the printing and publishing industry back when that happened, and the reason that we saw this transformation was because people could do it very inexpensively, just sort of like you can publish today. And the entire trade rejected all the new tools as not being good enough. And what happened was trade typography as a trade totally went away, because they said, oh, this is crap. And they didn't see that the entire industry was moving in that direction, and it very rapidly changed it. I see this really the same thing happening with newspapers and magazines, where if they reject the tools, and it looks like many of them are for tablets, that the whole industry is going to go over them, and that this new players will emerge, and we'll see that kind of restructuring happen.
Yeah, it'll be. Well, I mean, I'll give you one example. If you look at a publication like the Huffington Post, they're actually using a Drupal distribution from a company in Washington, D.C. that's also done a lot of distros for the government. And it's essentially a media magazine platform that's available to anybody. I mean, anybody can go and download it and set it up and run it. So look at how the HuffPost really had disrupted left of center publications because of what they were able to produce and deliver really quickly. So I think that's a great point, Tim.
But I still think that people will want good content. So writers like Julio and others will still find gainful employment. It just may be in a different structure than it is today, being, you know, working for a media company.
Yeah.
So we'll have to see how it shakes out. One question for Julio, though, back to the tablets, is you mentioned earlier you were testing the Motorola Zoom.
Mm-hmm.
Can you kind of compare and contrast that with the iPad?
I was impressed with the Zoom as it compares to the original iPad. It looks somewhat deficient when you compare it to the new iPad because the new iPad, you know, is so much lighter and thinner, and the paucity of is that a word? Paucity of apps, yeah. of Android apps for it's just mind-boggling how non-existent tablet-friendly apps on the Android side are, given how many phone Android apps there are. So it's a real head scratcher, and so those two things alone make the Zoom, you know, suddenly look like a not very good choice. But on the other hand, I'm very impressed with the Honeycomb, the new version of the Android OS called Honeycomb 3.0, and I think that's very, very well done. The other problem with the Zoom is it's more rectangular. So if you hold it in landscape mode, watching a movie, that sort of makes sense. But when you flip it vertically and try to work in that, what suddenly becomes a very tall, very narrow window, I think that's a problem. I think Apple is on the right track with a somewhat more square screen that works good in, you know, either orientation. So the Zoom is an interesting, you know, very capably produced device with some inherent flaws. The other thing I talked about, you know, the exquisiteness of the experience. The original iPad, hardware-wise, is slower than the Zoom is. The Zoom has a lot of power under the hood compared to the original iPad. Yet, if you do something simple, try, you know, just put your finger on the screen and drag an app icon, you know, from one part of the display to the other. Just drag something across the screen. You do that on the iPad, it's butter smooth. There isn't a single stutter ever. You try that on the Zoom, and it's a very laggy, you know, very jumpy kind of an experience. So power, you know, processing power under the hood isn't everything. You have to really nail the software. You have to really nail the interface and how it performs. And Android just has lagged in that. The phones have never been, you know, as good in that regard as the iPhone, and we're seeing the same thing happening with the tablets.
Well, I don't think they're playing the same game that Apple is. I mean, everyone on the Android and other platform, whether it's RIM or HP, they're sort of doing this feeds and speeds thing where they have a more capable system from a hardware perspective, but the software isn't there. So the experience for the user is not nearly as good. And then you look at the whole app situation where that adds another layer of experience. So Apple's really playing a completely different game, and it looks like that's going to be the future of computing as opposed to just, you know, raw power, where we seem to kind of topped out on that.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway.
Wow. Well,
but we're going to see this avalanche of tablets this year. So it's going to be a very interesting year for tablets. So,
yep. Guys, we are running up against our time, and we just lost Graham, so I'm going to bring him back in to say goodbye, I guess.
I'm back.
Okay. All right, guys, we're buttressing up to the end of our time. Buttressing is a word, right, Julio? I don't know.
So what's coming up in the next couple of weeks?
Well, what's coming up? We've got Mobile March, which is next week. And I got to tell everybody, there's only a few tickets left. So if you want to go, it's going to be packed this year. And you better hop too. We'll put a link in the show notes. And then the night before that, Mobile 3D is set for March 18th. And I haven't seen Phil and Justin and crew this excited about an event ever. Granted, they're running it. But and then Cloud Camp MSP comes up on the 23rd, which is shaping up to be another great event. And then the WordPress user group at the Nerdery. And then what's happening on Saturday?
The overnight 26. Website challenge, and I'll be on the WordPress team again this year competing. So we're looking forward to that. There's a pre-mixer that's on the 14th. That's just for the teams and the nonprofits. So we'll get to talk to all those people, and from those interviews, they actually make the matches. But what makes it fun is we don't know until they announce about right. 10 minutes before they start the clock who you have. So.
Yep.
It makes it more of a challenge, but we're much more organized this year than we were last year. So I have high hopes that we'll produce a much better site and hopefully quicker than we did last time.
Great.
And by the way, I'm going to be a speaker at Mobile March. I'm looking forward to that.
Oh, you are? Sure. Great.
So what are you talking about, Julio?
I don't know yet.
Oh, okay.
It's going to be tablets. You know, where are tablets going? What are the business implications? Those are sort of the broad strokes. I haven't nailed on my performance. It's going to be largely influenced by the iPad 2, which I don't have in my hands yet, and other trends. But it's going to basically nail the whole tablet thing.
Well, I'm sure there'll be a lot of iPad 2s there since it. Isn't it? It's right after the day after they come out.
I think Mobile March on the 18th. The iPad 2 comes out on the 11th.
Yeah, oh, okay. Right, so it's right, a week. Right, yeah. Right. So everyone will have one by then.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, also, it'll be interesting to hear if Andy Anatko from the Chicago Sun-Times was right when he said that he loves the Zoom, but looking at it next to the iPad 2, it appears that the Zoom was made by people in a Soviet prison camp versus Motorola. It's like, oh man, ouch. Oh.
Yeah.
We'll have to hear your take on it, Julio. So
absolutely. Yeah.
All right. And then Mini Webcom is coming up April 11th. We're going to keep mentioning that. So people register for that. That's really an outstanding event. If you do anything, web development and so forth.
And where's the Graham Thickens road tour going to be next, yeah. Graham?
Where am I going to next?
On your tour.
What do you mean my tour? Well, I'm coming home to Minneapolis on Saturday night, so I'm done for now. I don't have any other trips planned, although I kind of played with the idea of going down to South by Southwest, but I quickly decided to pass. It's just too big. Too expensive, too much time to burn, you know, and so I'll gladly watch that from a distance.
Sounds great. All right, gentlemen, thanks for being on. Julio, yep. it was always great to talk to you.
Yeah, lots of fun.
All righty. Take care, gentlemen.
Yep,
have a good day.
Bye-bye. Yeah.